into the realm of science faction, where flights of fancy become reality. Welcome to Radio Freeman on Revere Radio Network. Has now come when hidden truths which have long been concealed may finally be revealed to an awakening humanity. We may even go so far as to say that the time for thinking is over, and the time for knowing is here. There are three cover stories in the Old Testament of the Bible, the uncovering of which will provide an appropriate way to begin this apocalyptic process. I really didn't know what I was doing when I started looking into this image of Barack Obama as Akhenaten. You know, it wasn't my idea at first. Of course, someone suggested it. Of course, a lot of people were suggesting it, putting it all over the internet, saying, oh my God, look how Obama looks so much like Akhenaten. And so I thought, well, let me put my little creative handiwork to it, and I put his face together, and then someone wrote me and said, hey, you know, Queen Teed looks just like Michelle Obama. So I put my artistic skills to that and came up with the artwork that you see today with the Barack-a-Natin. And for me, it was a mind-boggler. Now, as I've stated in the past, I was certainly aware of the ability to clone mummies. And, of course, I think that the planet is far further ahead in its technological advancements than most people realize. And I know this is true. And that the story that we're looking at is so much grander than what we play it out to be. I see the ideas of the political spectrum that we're dealing with as merely a plank within this building. It's simply a portion of the story. It's certainly not all. And always the question of why. That's the one that drives me. Why? Why are people doing these things? Why is religion important in the first place? How could people follow a book that seems to make no sense? I mean, if you just read it without a priest all around, without some minister to discuss what these things might mean, it really is a different book, for one thing. And you might end up seeing it like I do, as ancient technology, as opposed to a story of God. But it seems that there's more going on in this story, and I really didn't know the can of worms that I was opening when I put these images together. And then how strange the occurrence was when it all tied into the Space War article that I'm working on. Because certainly these were two separate articles, two separate thoughts. One was on Obama and the coming Space War and the use of asteroids to speed the weaponization of space. And then the second one was just a side route, a tangent or so I thought, of Obama looking like Akhenaten and the rest of the family as well. And then, next thing you know, the asteroid comes, and, well, hell, it's named after Akhenaten, Satan. And this couples all together with my Lucifer studies and everything else that I've been looking at because of the strange coincidences. So this story has really been amazing me, and I've continued along with it and continued to study and learn and try to figure these things out. And I did do one story for you one time here about the coupling of the patriarchs with the Egyptian pharaohs. And we've got into that pretty deep, and you can find that on the freemanperspective.blogspot.com on the right-hand column known as the Obama Chronicles. And I've put those all together. And I'm also putting them out as a data disk if anyone wants a copy of it. I'm taking donations right now to help me with my trip to London to go meet David Icke and many others. So I'm pretty excited about that. But either way, they're free there on the blog, and I think it's an interesting ride. Absolutely, you know, to see that I was discussing these things a month before the asteroid came. and how it all just fell together, because these things I did not know. I did not know the story of Akhenaten and Moses. I had some thoughts on it, but I hadn't really given it deep thought. So as I'm discussing these things and getting it through, then I end up handed a channeled information from a man known as All Is One, who has passed away now. But in 2007, he wrote a treatise on Queen Tea. And as I've started to look deeper into this, I find many people have been into this story and trying to understand and reveal the hidden knowledge of the Bible. What's been missing? Why can't we find these people? Why has Amenhotep never been found, although now they're saying they might have found him? Why have Abraham and the rest of the biblical patriarchs never been found? We have not found their graves. We do not see their bodies. Unless we start to make these connections. So All Is One has titled this The Bible's Cover Stories Revealed, The Golden Keys That Unlock History. And I don't know where to go with this. Now, All Is One is also Arthur Earl Jones, PhD. So this is coming from a doctor, but it is channeled information that he believes that has come through his higher being to himself to express and understand what is going on in the pivotal moments that we are in today. And so as these ancient stories were such a pivotal moment, I mean, you got to admit that the time of the Bible had to have been a pivotal moment in human history, so too are the days that we live in. And so we got to start to recognize the magnificence of the times that we live in and realize that it's time to step up to the plate. We're all sitting back in the stadium in the seats and watching the show, but we need to take it to that next level. It's time for us to step up and step out. We have enough information now. I know people are trying to get the details, data, and everything to make sure it's absolutely correct that our government is trying to kill us. But you don't really need all that data, do you? It becomes just another thought game, another distraction. What really needs to happen is a movement. What needs to happen is a new expression of life that we all have within us. And we have now enough information to say, all right, we can walk away from all this stuff because it's just ridiculous, and let's go figure it out for ourselves. So that's where I feel that we're at. We're at a major pivotal moment. There's no doubt about it, and the planet is going just so strange. There's going to be so many things that we're looking at. And as you look at this story of Akhenaten coupled with Moses, then you might even realize that we're in another... Well, I would call it a ritual of Exodus. And as you looked at the different plagues of Exodus, you know, you had the plague of the blood. What did we have? HIV. You had the plague of the livestock. What do we got? Swine flu. You got the plague of the gnats or the lice. You got the plague of the frogs. Who knows what's coming? And then the plague of darkness. But what we're looking at here is we have all of these different and same similar plagues going on, which are being manufactured, obviously, by the intelligence agencies, by the secret cults that are guiding our reality, what I like to call reality manufacturers. And we know that these things are being crafted. We know 9/11 was a stage show. We know that the H1N1 is a concoction of four variant strains of flu. We know it's a concoction. We know it's created. And this is the same story. I mean, if you really consider the story of Moses, when Aaron and Moses go before the Pharaoh, and they asked to let the Israelites go. And of course, it was their God, be it Yahweh. We're going to look into who just the God is in these pictures as we get into all-in-one stuff. But this deity, their God of the Israelites, sent Aaron and Moses off to battle the Egyptian magicians, gave them a magic staff, and left Aaron in charge to do the speaking, since Moses didn't seem to be very good speaking in front of people. And they went and had a magical battle with the pharaonic magicians. And what did they do? They created these same type of forces that the military-industrial complex is building for us today. And if you can take it to that level, it's the military-industrial extraterrestrial complex. And then you start adding that picture, that's when things start to become a bit more clear. So we're entering an age where they're creating stars on the planet. They're creating wormholes and black holes in Switzerland. I just came across an interesting VLF in Australia. You might check that out, VLF in Australia. And it's another HARP facility, which is designed and shaped exactly like the inner core of the Large Hadron Collider at CERN. And it's also the same shape that you'll find on ancient Mayan scrolls. So it has often been my hypothesis that what we're looking at is a group of men that have been channeling information, almost like the movie Contact, have been receiving data along the way to design a proper portal. As crazy as it may seem, when you start to look back into who destroyed the atom and why, you of course end up back with the Hebrews. You come back to the Jewish. You know, we're looking at Einstein and Heisenberg and, well, you come to this same group and their information on how to destroy matter. The next part of the puzzle was to recreate matter. And so the scientists got together and they figured out how to turn protons into mass. And the third part necessary, of course, for this was the transportation device, which CERN certainly appears to be. And with their logo being 666 with a hyperdimensional portal, I don't doubt it. So this is how I see it, and I see that there's a larger story going on and that we are being manipulated by what seem to be other dimensional beings that are being contacted through rituals of these priestcraft of the mystery schools. If you look at this picture long enough, that's what you get to. And then, of course, their use of spells upon us to make us do what they want us to do. So the story of the Atlanteans and the Lemurians is completely obscured to us. We have some data, some knowledge, and some of it's coming to light to us now. But not much at all. So as we look into this story of Akhenaten, Moses, Queen Ti, in the ancient Egyptian-Hebrew bloodline, we have to take into account that there was more going on planet Earth. There quite possibly had been life on Mars. There quite possibly had been many interactions with extraterrestrial races on planet Earth. And we have to realize that this ancient story might just be more high-tech than we think it is. So All Is One goes on to reveal his first cover story revelation. And the first revelation is about the Hebrew-Egyptian lineage that began with Thothmosis III. Now, I had originally thought that perhaps Thothmosis III, and others had suggested this as well, was Moses. As we get into All Is One's theories, he takes it down to Thothmosis V, which is actually Thothmosis III's brother, and it becomes even more interesting. If you remember, the Egyptian Flight 990 that crashed into the Atlantic Ocean on its way to the Egyptian pyramids before the capping of the Great Pyramid with gold for the Y2K ritual was named Thothmosis III and had the eye, or the falcon of Horus, on its tail. This strange flight also stopped at a military base, picked up a couple of these Nazi scientists, and 33 Egyptian military, and headed off to the Giza Plateau for the capping of the Great Pyramid with gold, which then they crashed and the capping was canceled. Curious. So Thothmosis III is generally regarded as the greatest of all Egyptian pharaohs because of the empire known as the New Kingdom, which he established during the middle years of the glorious 18th dynasty. And that's where this whole story really begins, this coupling of the bloodlines, the Hebrew-Egyptian lineage, from the 18th dynasty. The cover story, which has concealed the true origin of this Hebrew-Egyptian lineage for approximately 3,500 years, may be found in chapter 12 of the book of Genesis, which tells us how Abram and Sarai pretended to be brother and sister rather than husband and wife while visiting an unidentified pharaoh in Egypt, but were sent away by the pharaoh when he discovered they were married. The secret truth, however, is that the ascended master Thoth, now this is according to All Is One, and if you start to study the Hermetic arts, all right, Thoth is Hermes, and that's why they're called the Hermetic arts. Thoth cannot be excluded from this story at all, because if you go to any of your mystery schools, it's going to take you back to Thoth. I certainly have the books of Hermes Trismegistus, or Hermes the Thrice Great, And it's very interesting, very lovely read. It's beautiful stuff, and really it sounds just like the words of Jesus. You know, I think if we took the Bible with just the words of Jesus and then just followed that, maybe the world could be good. I don't know. Yeah, but the thing is, this story has been manipulated, crafted, and that's what we're trying to reveal here. So Thoth, Tahuti, Hermes, Mercury, these are all the same people, and this is why your space program is called the Mercury Space Program. These are all the same things. When Mercury Insurance Company comes out and tells you that they're from another planet using me as their salesman, I would say no, Mercury is the god of magic. It has nothing to do with the planet. But regardless. All right, so we're looking at this secret, and what happens is that the Ascended Master Thoth arranged for Abram and Sarai to visit Pharaoh Thothmosis II at his royal palace in Thebes for the specific purpose of allowing to serve as the Pharaoh's concubine, Sarai, to serve as the Pharaoh's concubine, and using the name of Isis, to provide him with a male heir who would covertly inaugurate a royal Hebrew-Egyptian lineage. So it was with Abram and Sarai that we ended up with this Egyptian-Hebrew lineage. So they give birth to Thothmosis III. So this would be the first pharaonic Egyptian Hebrew. And they even his bodily features were distinctly non-Egyptian. Now we look into Hatshepsut. Now I had talked about her in having died the endless death. They tried to eradicate her from existence. Hatshepsut was one of the first powerful queens, and if you go and look at her temple that they placed there up against the mountain, built by a man known as Imhotep, you'll see that these are not backwater people. You'll see that this is a construction of design that we would have a hard time creating. We wouldn't even think of doing it. I mean, an entire monument crafted out of a mountain, except for perhaps Rushmore, but Rushmore doesn't even come close to looking like Hatshepsut's magnificent temple. So the historical fact that Thothmosis II was married to his half-sister Hatshepsut, who on the advice of the high priest of Amon angrily refused to permit her heiress daughter Neferur to marry Thothmosis III, thereby forcing her husband, Pharaoh Thothmosis II, to make special arrangements with the high priest of Ra for having his illegitimate son declared his legal heir. Thothmos actually means heir of Thoth. As a consequence, because Thothmosis III was only 5 years old when his father died, his stepmother, Queen Hatshepsut, then arranged to have herself appointed the legal guardian and co-regent, and she ruled for the next 22 years. And she worked in on Karnak and on Luxor. She has been involved in many great of the Egyptian structures. Now realize in the 18th dynasty, this new dynasty of the new kingdom, this is when things started to change. The artwork became less abstract and more realistic, and we started moving into this Hebrew lineage. Now, you're going to trip out when you hear what All Is One has to say about this Hebrew lineage. Such was the dynamic potential for racial prejudice and bigotry, because they had gone and erased all of Hatshepsut's cartouche and signatures after she died, trying to introduce the endless death. So he goes on to say that this is the racial prejudice and bigotry which the Ascended Master Thoth succeeded in introducing into the middle of the 18th dynasty by secretly arranging this inauguration of a royal Hebrew-Egyptian lineage. So there again, you know, I start to question, well, what is Thoth trying to do? I mean, obviously, this moment in time has caused nothing but hell on planet Earth ever since. So it only remains for us to make clear a distinction between the Hebrew-Egyptian lineage that began with Thothmosis III, whose parents were Sarai and Thothmosis II, and the Hebrew-Egyptian lineage which began with Ishmael, whose parents were Abram and Hagar. They subsequently became known as the Ishmaelite lineage of the Arabic people. So the second revelation. This revelation is about Moses and Akhenaten. The founders of monotheism, who were not only the immediate offspring resulting from a further compounding of the royal Hebrew-Egyptian lineage that began with Thothmosis III, but were in fact brothers. So consider this. Akhenaten and Moses were brothers. This is what he's stating here. And we're going to come to find out that Moses' lineage had to be hidden because the revolution against the monotheistic religion by the priestcraft of Amun. So the first part of the cover story, which has prevented biblical scholars from discovering this truth, consists in the erroneous translations of four generations into four centuries regarding the time spent in Egypt by the descendants of Abraham, or Abram, and Sarah, who is Sarai, prior to their exodus. As a direct result of this crucial chronological error, biblical scholars prior to an Ahmed Osman have miscalculated the time frame for Abraham as 2100 to 2000 BC, instead of what it should be, 1550 to 1450 BC. And so then the time frame for Joseph, the Israelite, becomes 1900 to 18, or it is recorded as 1900 to 18 BC instead of 1443 to 1333 BC. And therefore the time frame for Moses becomes 1390 to 1270 BC. So the chronological error has definitely thrown in a bunch of issues for people, because that's where we were not able to shift our focus and realize that these patriarchs that we have taken to be nomadic, poor people, turn out to be actually high-level Egyptians. You know, you don't end up in the Pharaoh's court on accident, by accident. So the story gets a little deeper and deeper and deeper, and we start to look at the different generations coming out with Joseph and Jacob, and that there was a specific purpose of concealing the momentous fact that while on the one hand father of Moses was none other than Amenhotep III, and on the other hand the maternal grandfather of Moses was none other than Joseph the Israelite, the ultimate truth being that Moses was the product of a masterful merging of Hebrew and Egyptian genetics, arranged by none other than the ascended master Thoth, who was known to the Egyptians as Tehuti, in the ancient Greeks as Hermes Trismegistus. Chapter 41 of Genesis reveals that Joseph the Israelite was 30 years of age when, after being sold into slavery by his envious half-brothers and after successfully interpreting the Pharaoh's prophetic dream as signifying 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine, he was appointed the Pharaoh's chief minister with authority to rule over all Egypt. It also reveals that Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the Egyptian priest of On, that's a northern city later named Heliopolis, was given to Joseph. So Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, was given to Joseph by the Pharaoh to be his wife, thereby authorizing the inauguration of an officially sanctioned Hebrew-Egyptian lineage, and that two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, were the fruit of their union. So now we have two Egyptian-Hebrew bloodlines running side by side, one covertly and one overtly. What Genesis does not reveal is that the Pharaoh's name was Thothmosis IV, who was the product of the original Hebrew-Egyptian lineage which began with his grandfather Thothmosis III. That the union of Joseph and Asenath occurred circa 1413 BC, and that this new and officially sanctioned Hebrew-Egyptian lineage was inaugurated 1410 BC by the birth of a daughter named T, who was thus a great-great-granddaughter of Abraham and Sarah. So now Queen T steps into the picture, and we find that she is the great-great-granddaughter of Abraham and Sarah. We have this Hebrew-Egyptian lineage going on, and we also know that there is prejudice and bigotry with the Temple of On, or the priestcraft of Amon, where they will not allow a Hebrew bloodline to rule. Having thus established the key connection between ancient Egyptian history and the Hebrew history of the Israelite lineage, as it is recorded in the Old Testament of the Bible, let us now return our attention to the daughter of Joseph, Aseneth, whose key role in the newly established and officially sanctioned Hebrew-Egyptian lineage, which began with her birth, has been carefully expunged and thoroughly excluded from the Bible. One of several family secrets not revealed either by Egyptian historical records or by that portion of the Hebrew historical records known as the Book of Exodus consists in the fact that, around the age of 16, T gave birth to an illegitimate child named Aaron, whose father was a young Hebrew stable boy by the name of Amram, who worked at the palace of the pharaoh in Thebes, now known as Luxor. This unexpected development occurred circa 1394 BC, approximately 2 years after the 13-year-old Amenhotep III married his sister Sitamon, in order to inherit the throne following the death of his father, Pharaoh Thothmosis IV. It was at this point that the ascended master Thoth began to intervene by arranging for the young pharaoh Amenhotep III to marry Ti. For the specific purpose of elevating her, rather than Sitamon, to the exalted position of queen. Amram, the stable boy, was then required to marry his Hebrew aunt, Jochebed, who, by volunteering to serve as Aaron's nursemaid, gave rise to the cover story that she was Aaron's mother. These arrangements were suggested by the ascended master Thoth and were implemented by Joseph the Israelite, who continued to serve as the chief minister of Pharaoh Amenhotep III after the death of Pharaoh Thutmose IV, and who continued to maintain access to higher consciousness by remaining humble and aligned. I think that's true. I think that we do maintain a contact, and I really think that that's where my data comes from. I don't know, maybe I don't sound humble and aligned saying that, but, you know, this stuff to me is miraculous. So Joseph becomes known as Yuya, and his wife as Huya. And this again starts to, or Thuya, my bad. So Joseph and Asenath become Yuya and Thuya. And these, you will find, are in the lineage of Queen Ti, or the father of. So several years later, Yuya, or Joseph, took the wise precaution of arranging for his elder son, Manasseh, who is also known as Anen, to serve as the chief steward of Queen Ti. And as a confirmation of this truth may be found in the fact that after resigning his positions as second servant of Amon, some priest of Ra at On, and chancellor of Lower Egypt, Manasseh then chose to change his name from Anen to Huya, as a means of signifying how closely aligned he was with his father, Yuya, who is actually Joseph. So as a consequence of her union with Pharaoh Amenhotep III, Queen Ti then gave birth to Moses in 1390 BC, who during his early years was known as Thutmose V, and also as Thutmose the Sculptor. She also gave birth to Miriam, who was known by her Egyptian name, Beketaten, and then, of course, Akhenaten. So Queen Ti is the birth of Miriam, Akhenaten, and Moses. Whereas the highly unusual physique of Akhenaten and his six daughters has often been misinterpreted by unenlightened scholars to imply that he was suffering from an endocrine disorder, the fact is that he was an incarnation of a highly evolved Palladian soul, which required special DNA that was arranged by the ascended master Thoth as an experiment. I bet you didn't expect that to come. In any case, the key thing to understand is that the Egyptian priesthood, which had been subliminally disturbed by the covert Hebrew-Egyptian lineage that began with Pharaoh Thutmose III, now became enraged at the overt Hebrew-Egyptian lineage that began with Queen Ti, even though it had been officially sanctioned by Pharaoh Thutmose IV. Although the mixing of Hebrew and Egyptian genetics was tolerated, the idea of such a hybrid becoming a pharaoh was regarded by the Amon faction of the Egyptian priesthood as an intolerable anathema, notwithstanding the fact that such an experiment was continually being encouraged by the ascended master Thoth. What is he up to, I wonder? To protect Moses from the potential wrath of the Egyptian priesthood, Queen Ti promulgated the famous cover story that we find recorded in the first two chapters of the Book of Exodus, which, in accordance with specific guidance that he received from the Ascended Master, was concocted by her father as a variation of the ancient legend regarding the birth of Akkadian king Sargon I, who you will find connected with fish people, from my understanding. Expanding on the original fabrication that Jochebed was the mother of Aaron, the mythological variation of the Akkadian legend was specifically designed to mislead the Egyptian priesthood into believing that Amram and Jochebed were the Hebrew parents not only of Aaron and Miriam, but also of Moses. It thus becomes clear that the information contained in Exodus 6:20 and Numbers 26:59 and 1 Chronicles 6:3 is the fact disinformation was originally contrived to conceal the true parentage of Aaron, Miriam, and Moses, at the price of erasing the name of their illustrious mother, Queen T, from the Bible. When combined with the first part of the cover story, which misrepresents the time frame, and the second part of the cover story, which conceals the relationship of Joseph to Moses Akhenaten in Egyptian history, this third part of the cover story, which totally falsifies the true parentage of Moses in the Bible, has effectively prevented humanity from arriving at a clear realization of the momentous fact that Moses and Akhenaten, the two great founders of monotheistic religion, were actually brothers. Now, once again, I'm always left with why. Why is this important, and who are these people? What made them into... Is it truly an experiment by a master magician Thoth that is trying to bring Palladian bloodlines and therefore Palladian thoughts into humanity? And what curiosity do I have as I relate this Akhenaten story to Obama and try to understand how this all couples together and how this might fall? Because we have a strange thing going on with this Hebrew-Egyptian bloodline. And certainly when I went to the Dallas Museum and checked out the King Tut exhibit, it was nothing but the bloodline and lineage of Queen T and Pharaoh Amenhotep III. It's an amazing thing when you start to look at this family and wonder what happened, because as I said with Hatshepsut, they also eradicated all knowledge of this bloodline. They erased Queen T from history. They erased Akhenaten from history, and even King Tut. And it wasn't until Carter found King Tut's tomb that we had any knowledge of these people at all. And of course, King Tut's tomb was absolutely the most magnificent find ever in Egyptian archaeology, and has changed the world and changed the way that we look at these people and understand them. But here is this one hidden bloodline, this one that was attempted to erase. And now they pop up, and now they're our president and first family, if you can buy into that. And not only that, they're promoting and presenting us their lineage over and over again with these King Tut displays, and showing us this bloodline that rules over us, and trying to get us to worship them. There's been a lot in this story for me. There's been a lot of learning that I've been picking up, and a lot of trying to understand, because I really, really want to understand how the Bible fits into planet Earth. I want to understand how these bloodlines and these religions constantly manipulate life on Earth, and I want to get down to the revelation of it all, the apocalyptic version of life. So that's why we keep looking and keep trying to decide and understand what's going on, and I definitely see some high strangeness going on. Is Thoth back? Has Thoth ever left? Is he still doing his little experiments on us? And, well, you know, what happens when they bring back Akhenaten and family? Curiouser and curiouser. As a consequence of our revelation of these hidden truths, which have been concealed by a complex combination of cover stories for approximately 3,500 years, it is now possible for us to arrive at the further realization that these two illustrious brothers, Moses and Akhenaten, were not only the great-great-great-grandsons of Sarah and Abraham, through the Hebrew lineage, which began with Isaac and culminated with their mother, Queen T, but were also the great-great-grandsons, or great-great-great-grandsons of Sarai and Pharaoh Thothmosis II, through their Hebrew-Egyptian lineage, which began with Pharaoh Thothmosis III, and culminated in their father, Pharaoh Amenhotep III. Let us next consider the highly significant fact that, according to the official records of Egyptian history, Queen T gave birth to a son by the name of Thothmosis V, who, according to this fourth part of the cover story, disappeared and was believed to have died shortly after the birth of her son Amenhotep IV, who changed his name to Akhenaten. Most interesting of all is the remarkable fact that, according to the archaeological discoveries made in 1912, and recently revealed by the publication of the Royal Women of Armana, the court of Pharaoh Akhenaten at the Royal Palace of Akhenaten, also known as El Armana, just happened to include a sculptor whom historians now refer to as Thothmos the Sculptor, and who providentially gifted us with a sculpted portrait of himself, which we have now recognized and correctly identified as Moses. So Thutmose V, or Thutmose the sculptor, is actually the hidden son of Queen T, Moses. Curious, right? Curious. Anyone who still doubts the fact that Moses was the older, disappeared brother of Pharaoh Akhenaten, and that Queen T and Pharaoh Amenhotep III were indeed his true parents, has only to ask themselves this decisive question. Do you really believe that Moses had a father who would marry his own father's sister? Well, we are talking about Egyptians. I would believe that, actually. Which is precisely what is claimed in Exodus. But perhaps I'm wrong. But we now know that Amram was compelled to marry his aunt Jochebed after he managed to get the adolescent T pregnant with an illegitimate child by the name of Aaron. Having thus established the true identity of Moses as Akhenaten's brother, let's now direct our attention to the task of uncovering the hidden truth about the way in which this glorious 18th dynasty came to an inglorious end, to the exodus of the 12 tribes of Israel from the land of Egypt, and the place in life that I feel we're at again. So let us begin with the fact that Queen T arranged for her younger son, Amenhotep IV, who changed his name to Akhenaten, to marry his cousin Nefertiti, seemingly the most beautiful girl in Egypt, the beautiful daughter of his gifted uncle, Ephraim, whose Egyptian name was Ai. So Ephraim is known as Ai in Egypt, and he is the father of Nefertiti. And Akhenaten and Nefertiti married when he was 15 and she was 17. So according to the unorthodox Egyptian scholar Ahmed Osman, who seems to have lost his way in the delusional thinking when he jumped to the erroneous conclusion that Akhenaten and Moses were one and the same person. Now, this is the same thing that Sigmund Freud was saying. Now, once you split it up and make them into two people, then even the historical records start to fit to this story. So Nefertiti was the daughter of Pharaoh Amenhotep III and his sister Sidamun, the legitimate heiress, which, if true, would have had the effect of rendering Akhenaten virtually immune to challenges by the Egyptian priesthood. Instead, the secret truth underlying the fifth part of this cover story is that the wife of Ai, known as Te, was a Hebrew Israelite who had disguised the fact that she was the mother of Nefertiti by pretending to be her nurse. That's funny, this type of story goes on and on when you start to get into the Rothschild households, you get into the Disney households. You'll find the same thing, the nursemaid, the maid, whoever, turns out to be the mother of Hitler through the Rothschild bloodline, you know? So this same story has been carrying on for quite some time, and there's definitely purpose to this. And a lot of it, in my opinion, is the hyperdimensional properties of DNA coding that allow for a more proper contact to specific energies. And so I believe these people try to breed in these DNA receptors so that their lineage will have the contact necessary to progress future, manipulate reality in the ways necessary for their so-called god, who we find are actually ancient Atlanteans misusing life on planet Earth. At this point, with the full support of his father, Amenhotep III, his mother, Queen T, his maternal uncle, Ai, and his devoted wife, Nefertiti, all overlighted by the ascended master, Thoth, the young pharaoh, Amenhotep IV, began to carry out a revolutionary transformation of the traditional Egyptian religion from unenlightened polytheistic worship of a complex combination of anthropomorphic gods to enlightened monotheistic worship of a one universal creator symbolized by the radiant sun. The oldest tradition in the ancient Egyptian religion is the mythology of Isis and Osiris, and these are the ones that we see now prominent in our world today. Osiris, the seventh dimensional ascended master of ancient Atlantis, whom the Egyptian priesthood worshipped as gods. Next is the mythology of Hathor and Horus. Now, Hathor is the bull goddess, the cow goddess, Elsie on your milk, right? And Horus, of course, was on Egyptian Flight 990 and is this rising sun that Bill Clinton was speaking of on the Y2K ritual. So the mythology of Hathor and Horus, the fifth-dimensional space beings from Venus, who were also worshipped as gods by the Egyptian priesthood. The name Hathor meaning House of Horus. Now consider this as well. It has been decided by some of the alternative historians that the very mount that Moses went to was the Mount of Hathor, where a temple of Hathor stood. And this is where he met with the burning bush. And this is where some believe the story of the golden calf came into the picture, because Hathor was worshipped as a cow. Then there is the mythology of Ra. He is, according to All Is One, the sixth dimensional light being from Venus, who taught the Egyptian priesthood to worship the sun. And finally, there is the mythology of astrology, on the basis of which the unenlightened Egyptian priesthood, which had worshipped the hidden god, Amun, in the form of a bull during the age of Taurus, now worshipped the hidden god, Amun, in the form of a ram during the age of Aries. Beginning in the fourth year of his co-regency with his father, the young Amenhotep IV commanded the Egyptian priesthood to replace their unenlightened polytheistic worship of anthropomorphic gods with the enlightened worship of one universal creator who was to be known by the name Aten and symbolized by the image of the radiant sun. Now, isn't it just curious that as I'm doing the Akhenaten Obama asteroid cloning story, and Obama comes out talking about human cloning, and then the asteroid coming in comes from a group of asteroids known as Aten, right? This is strange stuff, my friends. Akhenaten withdrew his support from the cult of Amun at the Temple of Karnak by moving the capital of Egypt 250 miles northward from Thebes, where his aging father had recently built a magnificent new palace, to Akhenaten, which scholars now call El Armana, where he created a whole new city in the honor of this new dispensation. Thus, what has started out as a progressive initiative that naturally evoked a conservative response developed very quickly into a radical revolution, which had the effect of transforming the Amun priesthood into a group of hostile reactionaries. And I think that's exactly what is going on today. I see that as exactly the same situation. As they get the Israelites and the Muslims warring against each other, as they get the atheists and the Christians warring against each other, just as Albert Pike, who also was a Kabbalist, a high worshipful Freemason, had stated in his letter to Mazzini, who gave the M to Mafia. But they stated how World War III would be fomented, and if you watch, it's just coming out exactly like that. But if you realize, there's a higher level of understanding that needs to be applied to our scenario. So don't rule out extra-dimensional beings like Thoth, or potential beings existing here from Venus. Keep an open mind, you're going to need it. So with the death of his father during the 12th year of his co-regency, when Akhenaten was 27 years old, the heretical position of this highly unorthodox pharaoh in relation to the Egyptian priesthood became increasingly precarious. And at the suggestion of his mother, he then appointed his beloved wife Nefertiti as co-regent. 2 years later, 1356 BC, the simultaneous assassinations of Queen Nefertiti and Queen Ti were carried out by Paramesu, a young army officer who had been recruited by Maya, the priest of Amun. So we can find evidence that may suggest that the elder lady and the younger lady just might be Queen Ti and Nefertiti. And once again, these mummies have not been found. Or officially categorized. So on the recommendation of his grief-stricken uncle, who continued to serve as the chief minister, Pharaoh Akhenaten then appointed as co-regents his eldest daughter, Meretaten, together with her young husband, Semenkar, the elder son of Pharaoh Amenhotep III, by Kia. Man, these name changes are really just getting to me. Like, who is who? So Akhenaten appoints as co-regent his eldest daughter, Meriaten, with her young husband, Semenkar. Now, as you look at my image, if you look at the Barak Akhenaten story, you'll see that Meriaten, is none other than Malia Obama. So at the age of 32, Akhenaten himself was assassinated by Paramesu himself, by undetectable poison. And a few months later, Pharaoh Semenkar and Queen Meriaten were also assassinated by the same cabal of conspirators. After marrying Akhenaten's third daughter, when they were both about the age of 9, Semenkar's young brother, Tutankhamun, then reigned for the next 9 years, under the close supervision of Chief Minister Ai. Remember that Ai was known as Ephraim, and he was the younger son of Joseph, the Israelite. It was this Chief Minister Ai who suggested that the pharaoh change his name to Tutankhamun, to replace the Aten with the Amen, going back to the worship of Amen-Ra in a desperate effort to preserve his life. When the young pharaoh Tutankhamun was finally assassinated by Paramesu around the age of 18, I, his chief minister, who was formerly known as Ephraim, and was now about 62 years old, took the extraordinary step of first marrying his own granddaughter, Queen Akhenaten, the widow of his young protege, who at the time was about 18 years of age, and then boldly proclaiming himself the rightful ruler of Egypt. So Ai takes over. Now this is the beginning of a militarial takeover. This is where it all starts to go from religion to military. And it gets quite curious. Because Yuya, or Joseph, and his son Ai, Ephraim, had established such exemplary reputations as chief minister of Pharaoh Thothmosis III, Amenhotep III, and Akhenaten, the Egyptian priesthood were at first extremely reluctant to challenge the right of Ai to rule Egypt, even though they were also extremely upset by the known fact that he constituted the epitome of the Hebrew-Egyptian lineage, which they regarded as anathema. To discourage the priesthood from challenging his authority, I had been careful to cultivate the support of several officers in the Egyptian army. I was carefully preparing General Horemheb to succeed him as pharaoh, and confirmed by the fact that Horemheb then married Ai's daughter, Mutjedmet, who was the younger sister of Nefertiti and Nakhetem. However, that Horemheb then betrayed his father-in-law by joining Maya, who is the one who instituted the assassinations, in authorizing Ai's assassination. Is confirmed by the fact that after succeeding him as pharaoh, Horemheb then proceeded to desecrate Ai's tomb and to annihilate all evidence of Akhenaten's reign in the same way that Pharaoh Thothmosis III had attempted to demolish all evidence of his stepmother, Queen Hatshepsut, during the preceding century, but for exactly the opposite reason. As a consequence, it was not until late in the 19th century and early in the 20th century, over 3,000 years later, that modern archaeological research finally succeeded in rediscovering, resurrecting, and restoring the officially erased and totally forgotten history, which began with Pharaoh Akhenaten and ended with Pharaoh Ai during the latter part of the glorious 18th dynasty. So Pharaoh Horemheb then began to prepare his friend Paramesu, the assassin, also known as Pa Ramses, to be his chosen successor as pharaoh, as well as his partner in crime. The son of a military troop commander by the name of Seti, Paramesu was first assigned the job of subjugating the Hebrews as their cruel taskmaster, who forced them to build the supply cities of Pithom and Ramses, was then authorized to join the Egyptian priesthood for the specific purpose of assassinating the high priest Maya, the very one he had been hired by, with poison. so as to take his place as the high priest of Amun and the primate of Egypt in charge of all Egyptian temples, and was finally invited by Pharaoh Horemheb to serve as the chief minister, an heir apparent in addition to being commander of the army for the northern half of Egypt, which you will find is where the Hyksos took over. So let us take note here of the fact that shortly after Akhenaten was assassinated, and long before he himself was assassinated, Maya had attempted to disguise his identity by taking on the name Per-Nefer. And now his tomb may have been found. With the eventual death of Pharaoh Horemheb, the once glorious 18th dynasty finally came to an inglorious end, with the 19th dynasty then... And then the 19th dynasty then got underway with a brief reign of less than 2 years by Pharaoh Ramses, who was initially known as Pharaoh Pa-Ramesu. So we're looking at the assassin. And who had been chosen by Pharaoh Horemheb as his successor in part because Pa-Ramesu had a son who later became known as the Pharaoh Seti I, and a grandson, who later became known as Pharaoh Ramses II, thereby assuring the continuation of this non-royal military lineage, which was of pure Egyptian stock. It was at this particular point that Moses, who had escaped to the Sinai Peninsula near Mount Horeb in the land of Midian after the assassination of his beloved brother, when he was almost 40 years old, Moses received a spiritual commission from the source of his being, which authorized him to rescue the 12 tribes of Israel by leading them out of the land of Egypt. And thus it was that, in a manner somewhat different than described in the Bible. So there we have it, the story, the hidden guide, the golden keys that unlock history. Or so, Dr. Arthur Earl Jones, known as All Is One, has to say. I find it truly intriguing and a great mystery to unravel, because there is so much more to this story. Why he doesn't take it off and explain to us what made this Hebrew lineage so important, what was the importance of the Atlantean Thoth bringing in this lineage to cause all this trouble that we're dealing with now. This is the mystery that we must solve. This is the story as it is unfolding, as revelations becoming more and more known. So, we will continue to look at this story and the high strangeness on planet Earth. We're going to take this thing as far as it'll go, and I promise you I will be getting deeper into the space war, the ideas of CERN, the potential abilities of our new high-tech reality, and just whatever high strangeness the spirit brings my way. And I will enjoy every minute of it. And as all of you know, this is Radio Freeman. I am your host, Freeman. And I will be taking off to London here very shortly. And I don't know, I'll try and get some interviews, try to get some reports, and I'll do my best to hook them up onto Radio Freeman as I meet and interview all these wonderful people over in the UK. Thank you all for your support and everything you've done for me. I hope to keep broadcasting to you, but it's possible that there might be a month without Freeman, but I'll do my best. I will, I promise. So this is Freeman signing off, Radio Freeman, and I'll see you soon.